All right, so today we're going way back to 1958
Oh, wow.
for a case in Texas that really, I think, kickstarted a lot of the legal conversations about weather modification. You know, can you own the rain? It's Southwest Weather Research Incorporated v. Rounceville.
Wow, an oldie but a goodie.
Definitely a goodie. So this case is fascinating. It really pits sort of emerging technology against, I would say, like, almost like an idyllic view of property rights.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting about this for folks listening is that, like, this case, it's not just some like dusty old legal precedent, right? Like the questions that it raised then about, you know, who controls the rain, you know, can you actually own the rain? And the whole impact of human intervention on natural processes, like these questions are so relevant even today.
They are.
They were still wrestling with these things.
Absolutely.
So this is kind of a really fascinating window into, you know, how the legal system first started, like trying to wrap its head around these really complex issues.
So set the scene for us. We're in West Texas. It is 1958. This is a time and a place where rainfall is the most important thing. Like everything depends on it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And we have this rancher, Joe Rounceville, who's been ranching for a long time. He looks up one day and sees planes flying over his land. And they seem to be doing something to the clouds.
Yeah, this is like classic West Texas imagery, right? Big sky, ranches, planes, and you know, this whole idea of, you know, people trying to control the weather, which is,
You're right.
it's almost like a mythical thing in a lot of ways.
Well, and especially in a place like West Texas, where,
Oh,
you know, it's
totally.
so arid that rain is really everything. And he starts to feel like these planes are preventing rain from falling on his land.
And you know, I can only imagine what's going through his mind, right? Like, here's this guy, his livelihood depends on rain, you know, his crops, his livestock, all of it hinges on getting enough rainfall. And then he sees these planes up there seemingly messing with the clouds. You know, it's not hard to see why he would get suspicious.
And so it turns out that these planes belong to a company called Southwest Weather Research, and they are engaged in cloud seeding. And cloud seeding back then, it was pretty new.
Yeah, it was like the cutting edge of weather modification, right? And you know, the thing is, their stated goal was actually to suppress hail, which, as anybody who's ever spent any time around agriculture will tell you, hail can be absolutely
Or
brutal. It
devastating.
can wipe out entire crops in just minutes.
Absolutely.
So from the get-go, you have this clash between Southwest Weather Research trying to prevent one kind of weather damage and Rounceville claiming that they're actually causing a different kind of harm in the process.
So on the one hand, you have this sort of almost romantic vision of like a rancher who just wants the rain to fall naturally on his land. And then you have this emerging technology.
This kind of almost futuristic attempt to control the weather.
And it's interesting because in a way, they're both trying to protect agriculture. Southwest Weather Research is saying we're trying to protect, you know, crops from hail. And of course, Rounceville is saying my entire livelihood depends on this rainfall.
And it's this really tricky situation because on the one hand, you have like the potential benefits of this new technology. You know, maybe they can actually reduce hail damage, and that would be huge for farmers. But then on the other hand, you have this very legitimate concern from Rounceville about the potential negative impacts.
So he sues them.
He did.
He wants an injunction, which basically means a court order to make them stop cloud seeding. And incredibly, the court grants him a temporary injunction.
And you know, it's important to emphasize that it was temporary, right? Like, this wasn't the final word on the matter. It was basically the court saying, okay, hold on, let's figure out what's really going on here before we let this continue.
But of course, Southwest Weather Research appeals.
Of course they do.
They're not just going to accept that.
No way they've got their own interests to protect. They're saying, look, what we're doing is legal, it's beneficial. You know, we're helping the agricultural community, so they fight back.
What was the essential legal question that the court had to decide here?
So the really big question at the heart of this whole thing was this: does a landowner like Rounceville have a legal right to go to court and ask for protection against someone artificially messing with the natural rainfall over their property?
Oh, that's so interesting.
It's such a fascinating question, right? Like, can you actually claim a right to the rain before it even hits the ground?
Because you would think that you would have a right to the water
rain.
Once it's on your property.
Exactly.
But this is something else entirely.
This is about the rain that would have naturally fallen if nobody had intervened.
Right.
And that raises all sorts of tricky questions about property rights and, you know, where those rights begin and end.
It really pushes those boundaries.
It does.
Of what we think of as property.
Yeah, it really forces us to think about whether property rights are just about the physical land itself.
Right.
Or whether they also include these kind of intangible natural benefits like rainfall.
So what did the court ultimately decide?
Well, they actually sided with Rounceville.
Wow.
The court basically said, yeah, landowners are entitled to the natural precipitation that would normally fall on their property.
Okay.
And they said, if you can show that somebody's artificial interference, like this cloud seeding, caused harm by reducing that rainfall, then the landowner has a right to go to court and try to stop it.
So how did Rounceville prove this? I mean, back in 1958, they didn't have, you know, the kind of weather modeling and technology we have today.
Right, exactly. It wasn't like he could just pull up a weather app and say, look, there's the proof.
Right.
But what he did do was he brought in witnesses.
Okay.
People who had seen Southwest Plains seeding clouds that looked like they were about to rain. And then according to these witnesses, those clouds either dissipated or moved away without raining on Rounceville's land.
So it was more like eyewitness testimony.
Yeah.
And sort of circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, it was more about establishing a pattern of activity and then connecting that pattern to the observed outcomes.
Interesting.
It's not the kind of rock-solid scientific proof you might expect in a modern case.
Right.
But it was enough for the court to take it seriously.
Because it was convincing.
Exactly.
And it spoke to that essential question of, like, was harm occurring?
And that brings us to a really important legal concept called prima facie harm.
Okay.
So the court decided that the evidence that Rounceville presented it was enough to establish this prima facie case, which means basically he showed enough evidence to make it seem pretty likely that harm was actually happening because of what Southwest Weather Research was doing. So the court was basically saying, look, we don't need absolute certainty at this stage.
Right.
It just needs to be reasonably likely that harm is occurring for us to step in and address it. And that's a really crucial distinction because it means the legal system doesn't always have to wait for absolute scientific proof before it can act to protect people's rights.
So there's this really amazing line from this case that, you know, kind of sticks with you after you read it. The court said, landowners are entitled to such precipitation as nature deigns to bestow.
It's such a powerful statement, right? Like, it has this almost poetic quality to it.
It does.
But at the same time, it lays down a really significant legal principle.
So what do you think the core principle is there?
Well, I think it's this idea that you have a fundamental right to the natural course of weather over your property.
Right.
And that you should be free from artificial manipulation of that weather that causes you harm. It's like this inherent entitlement to the natural processes that benefit your land.
So it's almost like you have a right to the rain as nature intended it to fall.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's like saying, you know, the rain belongs to the land.
Right.
And nobody has the right to interfere with that natural process if it's going to harm the landowner.
But did the court completely shut down all cloud seeding efforts?
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
So the trial court initially issued a pretty broad injunction. Mm-hmm. But when the case went up on appeal, the appellate court modified that injunction.
Okay.
They narrowed it down to specifically apply to cloud seeding that was happening directly over Rounceville's land.
Oh, so they were looking for a balance.
Exactly.
Between, you know, protecting Rounceville's individual rights.
Right.
But also acknowledging that this technology could have some benefit.
Absolutely. They were trying to find that sweet spot where they could protect Rounceville's property without completely stifling this new and potentially beneficial technology.
So this is a case from 1958.
Yeah.
Why does this matter today?
Well, because Southwest Weather Research v. Rounceville is like this landmark case. It's one of the first times that we see the legal system really grappling with these emerging technologies that have these direct and potentially huge impacts on our environment and our natural resources.
Oh, I see.
So it's kind of like an early chapter in the story of environmental law and how we try to regulate human interventions in the natural world.
So this isn't just about rain in Texas.
Nope, not at all.
This is about
all the ways that we're trying to control and modify and manage our environment.
Right.
And the legal challenges that come along with that.
It feels very much like a very early example of what we're dealing with today.
Absolutely.
As we're thinking about climate change and, you know, carbon capture, all of these emerging technologies.
Yeah, like think about all the debates we're having today about things like geoengineering.
Right.
Which is basically this idea of intentionally manipulating the Earth's climate on a massive scale.
Right.
Like, Rounceville provides a legal framework for starting to think about, you know, what happens if one of these geoengineering projects alters rainfall patterns,
right,
and causes harm to people's property.
Yeah, you mentioned airspace earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I vaguely remember hearing about this concept called the ad civilem doctrine.
Ah, yes, ad civilem, the good old days.
Something about owning everything up to the heavens.
Yeah, basically the ad civilem doctrine, this old legal idea, said that if you own a piece of land, you also own everything above it.
Right.
All the way up into the sky.
But obviously that couldn't hold airplanes.
Not a chance. Once airplanes came along, it was pretty clear that the ad civilem doctrine was going to have to be limited.
Right.
I mean, we can't have people claiming they own the airspace that jets fly through.
So how does this connect to Rounceville?
Well, Rounceville kind of highlights this interesting point that even though you might not literally own the entire airspace above your property, things that happen in that airspace can still have a big impact.
Right.
On your land and your ability to use and enjoy it.
So even though we don't own the clouds,
right,
we might still have a right to the rain that comes from those clouds.
Yeah, it's this idea that, you know, your property rights extend beyond the physical boundaries of your land to include some of the natural benefits that come with owning that land.
Mm.
And in a place like West Texas, rain is definitely one of those essential natural benefits.
So it's not just about the rain.
Nope.
It's about any technology that messes with the natural processes that benefit your property.
And that could cause you harm. And that's the key point. Like,
right.
Innovation is important, right?
Mm.
We need to find ways to solve problems.
Right.
But that innovation can't just run roughshod over people's established rights.
Without any accountability.
Without any accountability, exactly.
So for any law students who are listening to this, what do you think is the main takeaway?
From Rounceville.
Well, one of the things that really jumps out at me is that this case shows how the law is not just this fixed set of rules.
Right.
It's constantly evolving.
It has to.
Especially when you think about technology.
Yeah, like technology is always pushing the boundaries.
Right.
And the law has to keep up.
And I think this case really demonstrates that.
Rounceville is a perfect example of that. It shows how courts have to grapple with completely new issues that come up as a result of these technological advancements. And they have to find ways to adapt existing legal principles to address these new challenges.
So it's not just about rote memorization.
Right.
It's about really understanding.
It's about thinking critically.
How the law functions.
And creatively
in a changing world.
Exactly. You got to be able to apply these legal principles to situations that the people who wrote those principles could never have imagined.
So to sum up, Southwest Weather Research v. Rounceville established that a landowner has a right to the rain.
To the natural rainfall, yeah.
And if anyone artificially interferes with that and causes harm, the landowner can take legal action.
That's it in a nutshell. And it's a pretty powerful statement about the rights of landowners and the limits of technological intervention.
What I think is so fascinating about this
mm-hmm.
is that you could look at this case and say, oh, this is just
right.
you know, a case about rain in Texas in 1958.
Right. It seems so specific.
But actually the principles.
But the principles are huge.
Are so much broader than that.
They're way bigger than just rain in Texas. And I think that's what makes it so relevant today.
So as we're facing things like climate change and carbon capture, you know, these technologies that have the potential to alter natural systems in really profound ways.
Yeah.
How do we balance
right.
the need for progress with the protection of individual rights?
That's the million-dollar question, right? And I think Rounceville gives us some clues about how to start thinking about that balance.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds us that we can't just blindly pursue technological solutions without considering the potential consequences for people's property rights and their livelihoods.
So it's about finding that middle ground.
It is about finding that balance.
Where we can use technology to solve problems, but not at the expense of people's basic rights.
And it's going to be a constant challenge as technology keeps advancing. And I think cases like Rounceville, they give us this framework for how to approach those challenges. They remind us that the law can adapt and evolve to meet the needs of a changing world.
Well, I think we could talk about this case all day.
Oh, yeah.
But we're out of time.
I know. It's fascinating.
So thank you so much for this deep dive. It was great.
My pleasure. Always happy to geek out about legal history.
All right, we'll see you next time.
See you later.